Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. And I'm really excited to introduce today's guest. He's Mark Dispensa, a highly accomplished EOS implementer and serial entrepreneur. Mark is a revered business coach and strategic visionary who has worked with over 100 companies since 2020, helping them improve their strategic direction, execution, and overall outcomes. A lifelong entrepreneur, Mark started his journey at just 21, going on to found and successfully exit three companies in technology and artificial intelligence. His contributions to innovation are underscored by five U.S. patents in AI. Today, Mark is deeply committed to empowering entrepreneurs, particularly through his work as an EOS implementer. He guides business leaders, many of whom lead family businesses, through the challenges of growth, leadership, and long-term success. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Awesome. Hey, so let's start with your journey. What inspired you to become an entrepreneur at such a young age, at 21 years old?
That's a great question. I would say I was genetically encoded. I think from a young age, I was always dabbling with different businesses, none of which were overly successful. As I grew older, I started work as a software engineer. It lasted about 3 months there. Found a better opportunity at a consulting firm. And it was the owner of that firm, a guy by the name of Andy Fine, that actually pushed me into saying, hey, you're doing great here, but your genetics are predisposed. You can probably do this on your own. So along with that and a great first client in Greg Smith, that kind of propelled me into having my own company.
Wow. Okay. So now growing up, family members around you, were any of them entrepreneurially as well? Or was that unique to you? Were your parents entrepreneurial?
Yeah. So my father was in a line of restaurateurs, I guess you would say, if that's the right term. Okay. We owned a restaurant in Little Italy.
Oh, wow.
Which I never took part in, but my cousins did. And they eventually sold that asset. That whole area changed from the early boom times from the 70s and 80s. 90s were okay. And then that whole Little Italy area changed over.
Yeah. Yeah. So no strangers to hard work, that's for sure, in the restaurant business.
I'd say so. Yes. But that I was never predisposed to want to go near a restaurant in my life.
Okay. Understood. So to date, you've successfully exited three companies in the tech space. How would you say those experiences of going through that have shaped either your approach to business or your approach to leadership today?
Another great question. I would really say that the biggest lesson learned in each of those was, I hate using the, it sounds cliche, sticking it through. I think a lot of owners and a lot of entrepreneurs don't see it through to the end, which is they either quit when it gets hard and in the dip. But I think in all of them, I've been able to see it through to the end. And the short version is the first company, which I founded and was with for 7 years, we exited to Interpublic Group. And it was a lucky phone call when my wife was saying we're having twins to a client. And it was just a happen chance of, oh, hey, would you think about selling the company to us? And that's how that actually happened.
Oh my gosh.
So it was really, and maybe months before that, I had been thinking like, maybe it's time to get a job or other stuff. And it was because I had stuck it through and then chance just made it happen. The second one was with what became my two partners who are still my partners, Scott Littman and Dan Mallon. That business was a Salesforce.com company. And that was a much bigger exit, much more strategic. The first one was relatively small. That one was close to nearing 80 million for that exit. And then the third one, we happened to catch the AI wave at the very end, was we built it with IBM and then got the OpenAI wave hit.
Would you say that each time you've been through that process, would you say each one was different, configured differently, or would you say that your learning has grown and evolved every time you've been through that process of building up and then exiting?
Yeah, I'd say they're similar. They share a lot of commonalities, but different in the sense that every exit was unique in its own. But I think the learnings that you get from one to the other help a lot in each one. I think serial people who have been successful at it, one, there's a lot of luck, but I think luck comes with time. And the longer you're in something, the more lucky you are. But you also learn the indicators, you know the landmines as you keep going, not to step on.
And then at some point, you decided, I guess, enough of the doing. I'm going to try my hand at coaching. And you became an EOS implementer. And for those that don't know, EOS is the Entrepreneur Operating System. But tell us for a moment, what drew you to EOS and that particular framework of business growth?
Yeah, so the short version of that one is in that first company I mentioned, I built it, exited it, the ups and downs of entrepreneurism. And I didn't know, we didn't have a system. There wasn't a modus operandum. There was a business plan that I wrote that had a Yoda quote, do or do not. There is no try right on the front that nobody but me ever read. So fast forward, when we were working on Magnet 360, we brought in Mike Payton early in his journey. So this is going back to 2014 before EOS had even accelerated anywhere. I think Traction was out for maybe a year. And it didn't change who we were. It didn't change who our idea, but it really did foundationally change how we operated the back end of the business. And so that experience of learning and seeing what a system could do propelled me forward in that business, propelled us forward in that business, and also shaped the future businesses that I worked on. And about 5 years ago, when I determined that I was no longer the right person in the right seat as the CTO for the company I founded with my partners in Lucy Eye Company, I decided that I was going to basically drive that business. Sorry, I had a disturbance there. I had decided that from that point in each business, we'd carry it forward. But ultimately, sorry for babbling, the cleaner showed up. But ultimately, what happened was when I decided I was no longer the right person in the right seat as the CTO of that company, I was trying to figure out what to do. And I realized that, hey, I love working with entrepreneurs. It's what I want to do. So I began that journey of working with many clients.
So that started around 2020 then, right? When you first started into
May of
EOS.
2020. Yeah, it was a combination of the technologies were starting to change and I wasn't keeping up at the same pace that I probably should as the CTO. Combination of COVID and a whole lot of different things enabled this perfect storm.
So across that the EOS journey now, this latest chapter, a number of those EOS clients have been either family businesses or multi-generational businesses, and correct?
Yes. Yeah, there have been a few. I'd probably say probably a quarter of my clients are multi-generational family businesses.
So thinking about those in particular for a moment, how do the family dynamics play a role when you're guiding a leadership team through the EOS process? How does that show up? Or
So
does?
it does. And Sarah Stern, who's actually another EOS implementer, has a great, that's her specialty in family dynamics. And so when I work with those companies, we basically say, families, what's the ownership? What's the leadership and what's the doing? And making sure that we have clear lines of separation. So, first off, ownership doesn't mean working in the business, right? Ownership means there's an equity distribution and who owns what and how does that work and making sure it's very clear. Having a leadership structure is who's in the seats and what's the best suited function for those resources that we have in family or not. And then ultimately, how do we overlay that with what comes next and exit planning sometimes and getting specialties there because those things combine into those areas and making sure there's clear lines of separation. So when people are speaking, are you speaking as an owner? Are you speaking as a member of the leadership team? Or are you speaking as someone who works in the business? Because they're all very different hats that most family members need to wear.
Interesting. That's a very interesting way of looking at it. Has there ever been a time when, let's just say there is an heir apparent, a family member, but based on the findings through the, say, the EOS process, it's determined that they're not the best person to sit in a particular seat, whether that be the CEO seat or a different seat? Have you ever run into those types of scenarios where you're like, okay, good person, driven, wants to see the business succeed, wants part of the family, but maybe not best suited for a particular role?
Yeah, so many more times than I can count, and I'd say most of the time. And there's an inherent sometimes people assume a lot of things. And part of the process that we use in EOS is we build what we call an accountability chart. Think of it as a chart on steroids. And it describes the function, not the title. and the roles that are associated, meaning what does it mean to be in that seat? So what we do in that process is we basically say, look, we take the group and we say, no, as of now, nobody's in those seats. And we get feedback on who should be in those seats. Sorry, we get feedback on what should compromise the functions and what makes up those seats. Then we determine who belongs in the seats. And it's an open conversation between if there's family members in the room, if there's non-family members in the room. And a lot of times people think they're the best suited person and we have to have a lot of real world conversations. And it sparks a lot of emotion. It sparks a lot of different feelings and they come up. And a big part of it though is what's ultimately important for the business is in order for this business to grow and for people's wealth in the business, if they own it, or getting the right people to function in it is critical. And sometimes more often than not, it's actually not family members who take those seats.
Interesting.
And so, I say that realizing saying that is easier than the dynamics that play out, but it's an important role that has to happen. And look, heavy, deep conversations and healthy conversations are part of the process.
Yeah. So I think there's obviously every family governed business is a little different. And I'm sure that's been your experience. There's a lot of commonalities, but there's a lot of differences. But if there's one thing that I think all family businesses want deep down, it's to see longevity, to see the continuity of prosperity, whatever that might be. And then the question is, do they have the business sense to separate some of the emotional side of the equation of being a family member, of being in a family, and saying family is family, but business is business. And for the best of the business, maybe I need to step aside. Or maybe I need to play a different role, or maybe I need to go to the outside for leadership. And I'm guessing that sometimes you're at the center of some of those hard conversations as an implementer. Is that the case often?
It is the case very often. And what we try and get out is sometimes there'll be a separate meeting with the owners, call it an owners meeting, and getting aligned on what do you want from this business? What is the goal? Sometimes the goal is they want to have it generationally handed down and continue running. Sometimes it's generational wealth. There are different variables that determine that. And that's an important, to your point that you made a second ago, is it's important to know what is the function of this business? Why does it exist? And what do people want from it? And that does play into setting up the right business of how we structure it. What I've been finding more, I'd probably say recency, is you're seeing a lot of more, I don't call it blue collar, but maybe more manufacturing type or construction type businesses are lending themselves more to the next generation may not want them. And it becomes like it's an exiting type of conversation. Alternately, it could go the other way too, which is no, there is a clear second in command. Where it gets very complicated is when it started with a father and there are brothers or sisters or a mom or however you want, whatever the structure is, and it's been handed down one level and now it's going to the third generation. And now you have cousins and others, and sometimes there aren't people in the business that the dynamics change a bit. And that's where it gets a little more, I don't want to say tricky, but that's where a larger conversation has to be had. And whoever owns the majority of equity, hey, what do you want from it to drive the conversation? And it does yield a lot of conversations and there is a lot of alignment that has to happen.
Yeah. But I'm starting to see a little bit more of a flexibility or an open-mindedness, let's say, amongst when there is that generational transfer, because traditionally, it's the oldest of that next generation. But if there's, say, two or three brothers or siblings in the business, the oldest may not always be the best suited to lead. Sometimes the youngest is the best suited to lead. And those can be tricky dynamics too, because then you have to tell the oldest son or daughter, you've got to play a different role, and your little brother here is going to be CEO. And so that's really, again, getting back to some of the points you were making, Mark, is like, what do you want from this business? And stripping away some of the emotion and really looking at it as a financial instrument and looking for that continuity of prosperity in the best possible way with the best possible outcomes. Tricky conversations to have for you, my friend.
they're tricky, I think. But at the end of the day, too, it's the conversation. It actually frees up people. It's the conversations that haven't been had and they need to happen. Yeah, there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of elements. And sometimes it's not done in one meeting and it takes a quarter or even if it takes a year or two. But at the end of the day, people are better off for it because the conversations need to happen versus what typically happens is it's very quiet and dormant without a process. And then all of a sudden, you hear the word lawyers. And it's because nobody wanted to have those good, solid, hard conversations earlier to vet it all out and get to the right outcome. Instead, it simmers, quiet dialogues, bad holidays. And then all of a sudden it goes, you hear the word lawyer. And by that point, it's too late. At that point, you have a judge determine how it's going to work.
When a family governed business or a multi-generation comes knocking at your door and they're expressing an interest in EOS, what are they looking for typically? What do you think? Is it different than what a non-family organization might be looking for? Or sometimes are they maybe looking for some guidance through some of the challenges that are somewhat unique and distinct to the family governed enterprise?
That's a great question. They're usually the same, which is we want to implement a system or a framework to help us govern the business and run the business better. That's typically what it is. What I like to make sure of when I do ask, so there's a lot of just questions, getting to know the person, getting to know the business, whoever I'm talking to. And if it is a family business and a dynamic, you know, I make sure, hey, who's going to be in the room? Who's not in the room? How does that relationship work? Because the more information, the better. And most of the time, it's pretty clear. Generations matter, because that's how many people are we talking about? It grows. As that family tree grows, it expands to more and more people. But I'd say it's very similar. They want some system to control and run and operate the business more effectively. Mm-hmm. Don't say under the hood, though, is they don't disclose sometimes the family dynamics, and or it's a non-family member who's been hired that's called me in. And I have to have a really upfront, tough conversation, which is, hey, I know you run the business and you are the president or the whatever title you have in the business, but we need ownership. I need to make sure we talk to the owners, because this could go bad quick if we don't have alignment. I usually say, hey, from there, we have what's called a 90-minute meeting, and that plays out the dynamics a little bit better. Did I answer that?
I think you did, yeah. And if that family leadership did have misgivings or misconceptions about bringing EOS into their world, what might some of those misconceptions be about suddenly you show up and you're talking to them, and what might some of their misconceptions be? Oof.
What might their misconceptions? So you mean if a family member brought me in, or who? It depends. So they're different.
No, let's say if a non-family member brought you in, and then you said, oh, and then they're introducing you to the owning party who is a family, what might they say be concerned about, or what might they want to know or be clear on?
They'd want to know, how do I stay informed? How do I know what's going on?
Okay. Makes sense.
How do I, typical owner conversations, I think where it gets usually ownership, meaning the previous generation, who's usually the older generation, is really cares about, okay, how is this going to work? How is it going to run? It's the newer generation who's being, if they're underneath or they're starting to gain control, or it's their time in the generation, they can see it as an obstruction or this person wants to keep my hands out of it. It does vary. But I think at the end of the day, what I try and make clear is, look, right person seat, ownership is different than leadership. We have to make sure we clearly separate those roles. And that's always part of it. And even to the sense of, a lot of times we talk about profitability in the business and ownership equity versus other areas, which is like, if you have a family that owns, I'm going to use a round number, $10 million in profit, which that's a huge number. That profit then is, how is that distributed based on the ownership? Because the driving factor should be, how do we make this business profitable? Versus what happens a lot of times is they base it on salaries, and you end up in these really funky situations where they're hidden pensions for different people. And it's got to get called out, right? It's, hey, we have a lot of family on payroll.
Yeah.
And look, if it's a pension, that's fine, but let's call it a pension and be open and honest about it. And what do we need to drive the business forward?
Yeah.
That's where it gets complicated. But again, having those conversations up front and being healthy about it removes the ambiguity.
And I think that's a killer point you made, the idea that ownership is not the same as leadership, that the two are different. While they sometimes might sync up in certain instances, they don't necessarily have to, nor is it always the healthiest for the business for them to. And by virtue of bringing that outside perspective, I think that's something that was probably an eye-opener for some of them to say, oh, yeah, I never thought of it that way. And gets them thinking. One of the things, especially when you're working with an older business, traditions, right? You are something as an EOS implementer, you're a change agent, right? You're bringing change and new ideas and new ways of doing. How do you balance the respect for tradition with that need for structured and material change? How do you strike that balance in your practice?
Yeah, what I'd say is similarly, like when I said earlier, when we brought in Mike into our business, It didn't change our core messaging. It didn't change who we were to the outside world. We don't do that. We may amplify the messages, we may make them more clear, but it doesn't change the traditions of who you, what you've been, who you are at your core. We make it clear. So we say, look, if you have values, let's make sure we clarify those values. If you have a focus, let's clarify your mission, your core focus, your niche. Like, we just bring clarity to those things that are already there. What dynamically changes is the back end, like how you operate the business. How do you treat your employees? How do you manage those employees? And so we don't want to change what fundamentally made the business work, but we do want to add structure and elements to make it run better. So you don't want to change. If you have a 100-year-old business with multi-generations, that there's a lot of great things that happen. You know, just because one of us plunks in and does some inserts a system, it's not going to erase any of that. It should be amplified, but we should also get rid of the bad stuff that's been under the hood. So we want to change, keep what's great, change what's bad.
So across your time with EOS so far, you've seen and experienced and been the catalyst for some pretty amazing transformations. Is there one that really stands out? Wow, this one, we got it right. We got it right every step of the way. It was awesome. And the outcomes were just awesome.
Great question. There have been a few. I'd say one that sticks. And again, I'll be careful not to mention client names.
Sure.
One that does stick, yes. So second generation was so the business we walked into, it was handed off to the second generation. It was clear. We basically walked into that business. It was doing about $17 million a year in revenue. They're now probably approaching $60 or $70 million a year in revenue. And ultimately, probably they will have a high exit value because the goal, I think an early stated goal was, hey, we want to have a business that we love, we care about. But if we so choose, we want to make sure that this is generational wealth. And third generation isn't going to come into the business. And that was a known factor in it. And I think that's, the success really isn't the exit. An exit can be an option. The success is really in that they've been able to let go, have good leadership in the system. People have been able to stay in the business. The first generation has been able to act as like a matriarch and stay in some of the weeds and then be a mentor. But the second generation has been able to let go of the vine and be more of a visionary and big picture. And then at the end of the day, create a lot of value for but I want to be clear, not just the family, but for a lot of and all the employees that work there, right? Because if that happens, they get to treat their people really well. The people who are happy to work in that business. And then at the end of the day, if they choose, which may or may not happen, to leave that business, the employees will be taken care of. Everybody gets something. And then you've got generational wealth on the other side.
So when you start in with a new client, is the conversation of a future exit, is that something that's always put on the table or just put on the table when it's deemed like a viable result and outcome?
Yeah, you don't want to build for an exit. You've got to be a little bit careful of that, right? That sort of makes, you can make some bad decisions. But in the upfront conversations, it's a question. Hey, what do you want from the, and the way I'll pose the question is, what do you want from this business? And then they'll give some answers. And then I'll say, okay, what does success look like 3 years from now? And then I'll go around the room and then have them paint their own picture. And usually they'll say some things in the business. I'll say, you know, what does 3 years look like for you personally? Like, where are you at 3 years from now? If all the things we do are successful. And I steal the Dan Sullivan R factor question from that. And then driving forward, okay, where do you want to be 10 years from now? And those questions yield, okay, is it a handoff conversation? Is it generational? Is it building for growth? Or is it an exit kind of conversation? And by asking those questions, you're able to facilitate the conversation. And a lot of times I find that they haven't even really thought about it or asked themselves in the right way. And it gets them thinking. And it gives me the ability to say, okay, our intent here is they want to hand this business off to the next generation of the kids and the cousins. And what they really care about is that they will always have income. And so then I'm like, great. So that means you want to make sure that we have enough profit to cover off in the future on everybody that they can generationally have salaries, pensions if they need to, or work in the business, either or. And though that's like one of the eye-opening experiences that happens early without even going into it, right? EOS is a secondary factor.
Thinking about being, and we follow the EOS model too as a company, but certainly when you're in session, you've got, especially with a family business dynamic, you're talking about business things, but emotions can run high too, because there's professional, but then there's also personal relationships and very deep personal relationships. Have you ever been in session where emotions ran really high and you had to kind of play referee? Does it ever get like pretty intense or heated up?
It got heated. Yeah. Look, I borrowed from Jonathan Smith the comment, family first kind of thing. So if family's in the room and it gets to that point, if it gets really that hot, hey, go outside, have a conversation and recoup. Or if you need to go outside and swing some bats, great. Go, let's do that. Rarely, that's happened once or twice. Really, the dynamic in the room is more like, okay, take a breath. Are you speaking as an owner? Are you speaking as a cousin? Are you speaking as a family member right now, an owner or an employee? So which hat do you want to wear right now? Because if it's as a family member, that conversation isn't really probably for this room. If it's as an owner, hey, let's bring it up as a concern as an owner. And if it's, hey, Ed, you're a jackass because you didn't do this thing and you're just emotionally tied to it, then it's as an employee. But that telling which hat it is make forces them to think about the question. And usually if it's, no, I'm speaking as a cousin or a father, okay, now take that hat off and think about it as that person in that function. And it slows down the tempo and require and rotates the conversation. And it makes them think, who am I speaking as and how am I talking right now?
There was a previous guest that had a great line about when talking about fam business in front of family members who may be involved, and his mode of operation is speak your mind and do no harm. And I thought that was a great message because I'm like, boy, I wish I heard that many years ago when my
I'm
dad
going to write that one
and
down. That's actually really good.
I were. Yeah, go ahead. Speak freely, speak honestly, speak openly, but just remember, words can help and words can hurt. And sometimes you can't walk back something you said. Just be mindful of that too. And I thought that was a real healthy way to kind of strike that balance. For those that are somewhat unfamiliar with the EOS model, would you say what components of the EOS framework would you think resonate most with the family governed business? What kind of seems to, in your experience, say, wow, I really love this component of EOS?
Yeah, I think they're the two components. It would probably be vision and traction. I think simply the vision component, having the eight questions, having that business, that simplified business plan, making that clear, and everybody knows where are we going in the future, the 10-year, the 3-year, this year. So flipping it over, that two-page business plan or the eight questions is huge. And then the other one is the people component, right person, right seat, the accountability chart. Sorry, I meant vision and people. Vision in that everybody knows where we're going, and people, right person, right seat, is the accountability chart and the core values dynamics that play out. Because you can, those two from a family perspective have been the ones I've been talking about the most today, right? Clear on the business plan, where are we going, and who's in what seat, and how are you speaking?
And talking about another aspect of your background, of course, being a serial technology entrepreneur and one that's got a heck of a lot of know-how around AI and the emergence of AI. Do you ever see those intersect where you're talking EOS, but then in your practice, are you bringing to bear some of your perspectives and background in technology and AI to bring to them, to introduce to them, or is it really, do you keep them separate?
No, they bleed together all the time. I think part of it is when I give the clients homework, I really lean on, using AI and how to use it. I try and keep tech out of the room, other than maybe occasionally bringing something up. Examples. One, the AI side is knowing how to use the Gen AI tools is key. I think it's important. I joke with people like, hey, you're going to get more pure, better answers out of ChatGPT on EOS questions than I would provide, which is an honest assessment. I think they're going to get that. And I think the other side of it is when they go deep on the accountability chart, one of the things I've started to bring into the room is when you, there's a tool in EOS called Delegate and Elevate. And it used to be where a lot of it had to do with, can you delegate this to a person or a process? I now say, can we delegate this to a bot? Is there a way to delegate this to AI in some way, shape, or form? And typically, more and more there is. And that's making people's jobs clear. So I do bring it into the room from a follow-up, easy homework kind of thing. But whenever it's viable in the room where somebody brings up an issue, I'll say, hey, I'm taking my EOS hat off. And you're discussing issues in depth. And I'm like, have you looked at this? Have you looked at that? And then lastly, really from the perspective of, hey, from an AI-first automation standpoint, you really should be looking at this from a delegation standpoint to automate people in some way, shape, or form. And the idea there is not to get rid of people. It's how do you get the best use out of people, right? So something can be automated and we can make it faster, better, cheaper. Great. But let's take that bandwidth and apply it to human places, right? We don't want to just make this into an exercise of, oh, let's just cut, because you're going to cut your way to nothing. It's how do you free up that time? Think about the bandwidth that people can get using on other things that they love to do and they're great at. So that's a portion I bring in. if it goes really too deep, then I'm like, okay, look, you can, here's some advice and input, but it's a whole different caliber level. But most of the time we can solve it in the room and I'll act as a strategy AI resource.
And I think that's a great segue into AI in a very soft way, because those of us like you, like me, we're fairly deep into AI. We sometimes forget that the rest of the world's not always there. And some people have never touched ChatGPT. Some people don't even know what the heck it is. And by using EOS, is like, try this. And that's usually where the ball starts rolling. You try one function and then you start to say, oh, it can do that. What else might it be able to do? And it opens up the imagination to other possibilities. But what a great way to introduce it in a very soft, easy, and non-threatening way, this technology that is quite powerful. But for some, there's some trepidation to taking that first step. I'm glad you said that, and I'm glad you do that. That's a great practice.
Thank you.
So if you could give one piece of advice to a family business that might be thinking EOS, thinking of other things, but has some hesitancy about the model, what might you tell them?
I think, look, EOS is, there's several systems out there. There's EOS is one of them. And obviously that's the one I choose because I do it. But I think at the end of the day, for a family run business, you do have to make that separation. And if you want, in order, if you want your organization to run more efficiently, make it run better so that you can get a grip on it, know what's, how to take that asset and make it into the best asset it can be. You need a framework to manage and operate your business. That framework is a way for you to, one, do the things you want to do with the business, but also if you don't want to be in it, separate yourself from it. It allows you that level of control versus, yeah, you're doing things and obviously you're doing things that are working, but organizationally setting things up so that it can run in the best possible way. That's all any of these frameworks really do. It doesn't change who you are, but it does change how you operate. And so EOS, we say three quick things, right? Getting clear vision, getting everybody aligned with where we're going. So it's super simple and everybody in the organization gets it. Traction, the tools and ability for us to get there, right? Manage the business, that framework. And then healthy, which is probably the biggest component that we've been talking about today, which is getting the stuff out there that needs to be said so we can have the hard conversations to move forward, right? Mm-hmm. Those are probably the biggest elements specific to EOS, but any of the frameworks, when you use them correctly, like a diet, there's lots of them, getting aligned, getting prescriptive and executing against it will get you there faster.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can attest, as I looked at a lot of models, tried several models, and I too found, in our organization, found EOS to be the most effective, and I'd say the most pragmatic. Like, you can actually get things done. And, you know, my biggest takeaway from the methodology was we had a habit back in the day of sweeping things under the rug. And after a while, the rug was about 20 feet high off the ground because we kept sweeping. EOS doesn't allow you to sweep under the rug. You got to put the issues on the table and you got to do so with regularity. And that means that the rug stays on the floor and not 20 feet off the ground. So that's a real good thing. So looking to the near future, talk about something that's exciting you right now, Mark, and whether it be in the EOS model or in the world of AI or something that's going on with one of your clients, what's something that's really getting you excited right now about the near future?
Another good question. I think it's I think we're in this interesting space right now where there are so many things happening at so fast a clip. Really, and it's really around the AI stuff, but not in the generic tech sense. I think for the first time ever, you don't need to go to school for tech to code. You don't need to, to be a creative, your barriers are less. Like there's a lot, the barriers to do something are reduced. Mm-hmm. And I think what's really exciting is all these things that we can live in an abundance where everybody can execute faster. They can get an idea. Like the Gen AI tools are about being a buddy, right? You can talk to it and get faster. The computer's not going to have desires or wants. You do as a human. And that's where this gets interesting because you get to do more things and test things out and learn them. And I think it's amazing because it lets you test and learn things so much quicker. It lets you understand where if you want to test an idea, if you want to do research on a topic, it lets you do those things in a way that we hadn't been done. And I think what really excites me is the robotics and the AI side coming together and where it goes. And I think you get a lot of the conversations that go dystopian very fast. You end up in that sort of, in my heart of hearts, I don't believe that to be the case. I think it's going to allow people to focus on their best use of time, things they love to do and they're great at. And there's going to be some disturbances and there's going to be some chaoticness that happens in any major change, but it's exciting because at the end of the day, what comes after the, whatever the shakeups are going to be, it just allows for people to, I mean, I use this example, and sorry, cause you got me on a little bit of a rant here, but if you have robotics that can help assist building a house, the price of a house comes down. Like right now we're in a world where in the US and especially in New Jersey, where you and I are, you can't come out of college and go buy a home. It's like $1 million. How do you, if you have no savings and now you've got student debt. So those things become more affordable. It brings the price of things down so that you can live in more abundance. And I think that's really where the mindset needs to be. And what I'm most excited about is that. And I'm really excited about where that's going and where it's headed. And that combination of between AI and robotics is this really cool space. I have no idea where it's going to go, but I'm living in a world of every day you're seeing new things happen, and it's exciting.
Yes, it's my perspectives on it have, I think, shifted back to more of a healthy balance in that it is a doer, but not the best doer yet, but it is an awesome collaborator. And in its awesome collaboration, it makes you a better doer. I continue to maintain that the right path forward is some form of hybrid model where it doesn't necessarily have judgment. It doesn't believe in morality outside of what the tenets of law might quote, or heaven and hell, but it does accelerate learning, knowledge, and most certainly collaboration at a viciously rapid pace, which I think makes us better, smarter, and move faster with better decision-making. I think the way forward is always going to be some form of collaboration. No, it's not going to be the Terminator movie just yet, but definitely some exciting implications coming forward. So last question, Mark, if one of our listeners wanted to learn more about you or more about EOS, what's the best way for them to connect?
Yeah, the easiest way. So two things, you can go to dispensa.me, that's dispensa.me, or just give me a call, text me 646-752-4186.
Awesome. Awesome. Mark, thank you so much for sharing your journey and your insights with us today. Again, we've been speaking with Mark Dispensa, seasoned entrepreneur and EOS implementer, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. Thanks so much for joining us at Growing Up B2B, and have an awesome day. Thanks again, Mark. It was great having you.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.